Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Roderick Tremblay, who's a Professor Emeritus of Economics and International Finance at the University of Montreal. He served as President of the North Economics and Finance Association, President of the Canadian Economic Society, and was a member of the Committee of Dispute Settlements of the North America Free Trade Agreement. His books in English include The New American Empire and his latest, The Code for Global Ethics, 10 Humanist Principles. Welcome to Background Briefing, Roderick Tremblay.
I'm very glad to talk to you.
So in terms of humanist principles, in terms of global ethics, Oxfam has just come out with a report which coincides, of course, with the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, which it's called Working for the Few. And it finds that this report finds that 85 people on this planet are as wealthy as half of the world's population. That is, I would say, would indicate that we have a global ethical problem, surely.
Yes, you're right. I'm even surprised that half of the world population has enough wealth to match the 85 super billionaires. Because we live in a world of in a period of more and more wealth concentration, and with the principle of compound interest, the more wealth that you have, the more you get. And I think we are going back to the 19th century when so-called robber barons, used to run the government and run the economy and run the media. And all these forces reinforce each other to produce wealth concentration on a domestic level, but also on the world level.
Well, specifically, the study finds that the richest 1% had $110 trillion in wealth, which is 65 times the total wealth of the bottom half of the world's population, and that the bottom half of the population of the world owns about $1.7 trillion, or about 0.7% of the world's wealth. So that's the same amount as the wealth owned by the 85 richest people. That's how the report goes. So when you say we're entering a new era of global robber barons, you could also suggest, I think, that we're heading into a period of new feudalism, are we not?
Oh, yes, new feudalism and new economic stagnation, because a lot of that wealth that Oxfam mentioned is hoard. It's not recycled in the economy. And this creates a permanent economic stagnation. And if you add bad economic and political policies by governments, this, of course, reinforces it. In the past, governments had the goal, the objective of equalizing a bit the results of the market failures. But nowadays, governments stay out of that. And so the process of wealth concentration and income disparities increase over time. Now, if you look only for the 20th century, we are back to before the 1929, as far as the United States is concerned and as far as income inequalities is concerned. So the problems are that we're reaching a peak now. Are things going to get worse, and nobody knows?
Well, the United States, just in the last decade or so, has wasted $7 trillion at least on wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and at least $12 trillion on bailing out Wall Street, who almost destroyed the global economy back in 2008. So governments, at least the United States government, is wasting wealth. At the same time, private individuals are accruing wealth. Is that a way to look at it?
Well, that's one way of looking at it, because this is sort of a perfect storm, you know. You have costly wars abroad, and inside a nation like the United States, you have also a sort of subsidization of banks, of large banks. The Fed has increased, for example, its balance sheet by about $3 billion. Most of that new money was not rechanneled into the economy. It was landed and given to the banks to to recapitalizing them to increase their capital.
You meant $3 trillion, not
$3 trillion, yeah.
Trillion, not three. You said $3 billion.
And you have other policies, for example. We have a policy of exporting jobs through outsourcing. At the same time that the immigration policies bring a lot of new workers inside, therefore we import labor and we export jobs. So there's an incoherence in economic policies and political policies. And if you put that all together, lower taxation for the very wealthy, you put all these factors together, you end up with the result that we see. In my blog, I have a blog called the newamericanempire.com, and I wrote an article called The Five Pillars of the Growing Inequality on December 18, 2012, a year and a half ago. And I explain why these five pillars are creating that perfect storm that result in wealth and income inequalities.
Again, I'm speaking with Roderick Tremblay, who's a professor emeritus of economics and international finance at the University of Montreal. He served as president of the North Economics and Finance Association, president of the Canadian Economic Society, and was a member of the Committee of Dispute Settlements of the North America Free Trade Agreement. His books in English include The New American Empire and his latest, The Code for Global Ethics, 10 Humanist Principles. And we're discussing the Oxfam report that was just released that finds 85 people on this planet are as wealthy as half of the world's population. And I mentioned the 2014 World Economic Forum in Davos underway now, Roderick. Last Thursday, the World Economic Forum stated in a risk assessment that income disparity was one of the 10 global risks of highest concern in 2014. So there you have all the billionaires, world leaders, sitting around in hot tubs in Davos fretting over income disparity. Excuse my cynicism.
Yes, and drinking champagne and probably criticizing any policies that will try to cure that. Out of the 10 global challenges, I think wealth and income inequalities is probably second or third, because that will lead to political instability, permanent political instabilities in many countries, and we see that exploding. We see these revolutions are taking place in many, many countries, because now with the instant information world that we live in, people know that they are poor. In the past, they didn't know. You know, they had no way. Everybody was poor around them. But now they join, they go on the internet, they watch television, and they know that people are very rich somewhere, and some and they are very poor, and they don't want to accept that anymore, and that leads to political instability. So that's a fact, but I would like to know what proposals they have to advance to try to mitigate that problem.
So is this inexorable, though? That's what I find extraordinary, Roderick Tremblay. Here we are in the American democracy that's based upon the myth of the American dream and of upward mobility, the Horatio Alger, you just, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and the sky's the limit. And yet the reality is a downsizing of the middle class and of working Americans, and conversely, the rich getting richer, and even one of the richest people in the United States, Warren Buffett, has warned that we are in danger of becoming a plantation economy, and that seems to be where we are heading. What is driving this, do you think?
The main reason is because there are no debates, no basic debates on the problems. Everything is superficial, opinions. The media do not do their job. Academia is remote from reality, and governments are very corrupt, and they cater to the fundraisers and to the people who give them money. And of course, the more wealth, the more money a minority has, the more they can influence the political process. And it's a vicious circle in a way, and that's why it's very difficult. It will be very difficult to cure that and prevent it from getting worse. If I look only at the first of my five pillars, the fact that we have open markets worldwide and we have give free movement of capital and companies around the world, while labor is not mobile, of course, for linguistic reasons, for nationalistic reasons, whatever, and therefore there's a dichotomy between the need of the working people and the need of the large corporations. The large corporations can pack money outside of the United States, for example, and do not pay taxes. There are many large American companies. I won't name any, but you can go on Google and you will know who they are. They have billions of dollars which are ordered, and they are not brought back to the United States to create jobs, but they are ordered, and they don't pay taxes on that because the tax code here in the United States says that you can keep your money. A corporation can do that. An individual cannot do that, but a corporation can keep the money outside of the United States and not recycle that money inside the economy in the U.S. So this is an incoherent economic policies proposed by people who profit from it, from these policies, but the largest number of people are hurting by that.
And what explains the global disparity then? You've given us an explanation for what's happening here in the United States. Does the same explanation apply to the rest of the planet?
Well, the rest of the planet, it's not everybody who has, it's not all countries that have oil, for example. Of course, in the Middle East, they have bad governments and bad policies, but they have so much oil, they can get away with it. But in Africa, it's different. Their political system is not very solid. They will need a tremendous amount of investments to create jobs. But they still have a tribal approach to problem. Their rate of growth of population is much faster than what their economy can produce. That's why they have to emigrate to Europe and North America. So there are many reasons. Asia is much more on the right path, though. China, especially China and Japan, of course, South Korea. These are countries that are getting out of their poverty fast. That's part of the world. South America is not too bad also. South America, Brazil, Argentina, Chile are getting faster out of the poverty. But there are pockets. Some governments, North Korea, of course, is a good case, where people are poor and are going to remain poor for decades to come if policies are not changed.
Well, just in closing then, Roderick Tremblay, I suppose the difference between, say, Russia and the Ukraine, which is in turmoil because the ruling family are stealing the country blind, and Putin is supposed to end up as one of the richest men on the planet. So here in the United States, our politicians don't steal us blind. They just enable the rich and powerful to basically steal us blind. Is that the difference?
Yeah, well, political corruption is widespread. We have democracy in name, but in reality, we have plutocracy. Even on my blog, I wrote an article a few years ago about plutocracy replacing more and more democracy. A guy like Franklin Delano Roosevelt could not be elected nowadays because his proposals will be killed by rich contributors. My biggest fear is that political corruption prevents any cure to that disease of increasing wealth and income inequalities. It's a vicious circle. It will be very hard to break that circle.
Well, Roderick Tremblay, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
You're welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Roderick Tremblay, who's a professor emeritus of economics and international finance at the University of Montreal. He served as president of the North Economics and Finance Association, president of the Canadian Economic Society, and was a member of the Committee of Dispute Settlements of the North America Free Trade Agreement. His books in English include The New American Empire and his latest, The Code for Global Ethics, 10 Humanist Principles. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about Robert Gates' new memoir, which our guest calls a political psyop disguised as a candid tell-all memoir.